Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Sunranto Show is brought to you completely ad-free by all of our Patreon subscribers. Find out more about how you can support the Sunranto Show at patreon.com/sunranto. Enjoy our conversation with broadcaster Mick.
Cubby blue blood flowing through our veins. Sitting in the bleachers in the rain. We've shed a million tears and drank as many old style beers out at the game. Let's go, Cubby, Sunranto.
Michael Cotton.
Sunranto.
Michael Cotton.
Sunranto and the lovable Lucy.
Boutros Ghali.
Sunranto.
Michael.
Sunranto.
Cotton.
Sunranto and the lovable Lucy.
Michael Cotton.
Welcome to the Sunranto Show. We have a very special guest on today. It's the voice of the Tennessee Smokies and the voice of spring training Cubs radio. It's Mick Gillespie. Welcome to the Sunranto Show, Mick.
Hey, it's great to be on with you guys and talking some baseball, even though we're not playing any right now.
Well, that's kind of what we've been trying to do, or talking around baseball or the possibilities of baseball even happening. But we're also joined here, just so you know that they're here, Creepy Crawly's here in the house.
What's going on?
And, of course, Michael Cotton.
Hey, I'm back.
So, Mick, no baseball. You were getting ready to gear up for another season of Tennessee Smokies baseball. So, what the heck are you doing with yourself right now?
Yeah, not a whole lot. I mean, you know, it's been mostly time spent in the apartment. I've watched a ton of Netflix shows and series, and I've seen Tiger King and McMillions and the entire Breaking Bad, which everyone told me was great, and it really was. And then every other show that goes along with Breaking Bad, Better Call Sal and El Camino, and old movies, Indiana Jones and Back to the Future, anything I can watch. Try to watch a little bit of the news, but man, it's been really slow, honestly, slow and boring. I've exercise and, get out a little bit, but for the most part, it's just been hanging out here.
So, Mick, you've been with the Cubs since 2007. So you've been in minor league baseball for a while. There's some negotiations going on right now between MLB and MILB as far as the minor leagues are concerned. What is your take on what you see so far?
Yeah, I mean, that's something that I'm very familiar with, because I've worked with Boyd Sports and the Tennessee Smokies for a long time, and Boyd Sports operates not just the Smokies, owns that team, but three of the teams in the Appalachian League, rookie level, Elizabethton, Johnson City, and Greenville. And all three of those teams are on the list of 42 that Major League Baseball plans on getting rid of. So I've been there. It's the Johnson City team in particular does really well. There's a huge fan base. People like to go out there. Great like craft beer area of the country. It's a small town, but it's growing, and the attendance is fantastic. It's just a shame, and I hate it for a lot of reasons. I feel like shrinking the game, contracting teams is not a good idea. Even at this level, because Major League Baseball really doesn't have a strong reach here compared to college football, and having those teams gives a lot of these cities, it's their only professional team, just that one area where they kind of have that connection to the Major League, baseball teams, and also to the sport itself, but we've seen that the sport is getting smaller. And I think to me personally, that's what I don't like the most. But I get why Major League Baseball is upset. You know, a lot of these teams that they have on this list haven't taken the initiative with the city and the ownership to invest in the facilities, you know, so the players, you know, are playing in conditions that Major League Baseball teams don't feel like is better than what they can offer in their spring training facilities. Mm-hmm. You know, I think they were upset about some other stuff too, you know, maybe the amount of travel and, you know, and all. But at the end of the day, I don't think minor league baseball has negotiated well with MLB, and I think all those teams are going to be gone if that's what Major League Baseball wants.
Yeah, they contracted, what, 40 teams, something like that, 42 teams or something like that? And do you think that it should be kind of on Major League Baseball to provide some of these training facilities, considering that they are their players?
Well, I mean, I don't think so, and I'll tell you why. I think with Major League Baseball paying for the players, the coaches, taking care of that aspect of it, the business model is pretty good for the minor league teams if they're in a decent market and they have a facility that fans want to come to, you know. And so there's a lot of different pillars to this. You want to have a stadium and an environment where guys like us will show up, have a beer, watch the game, you know, and enjoy it and it be fun. And the players aren't a commodity, so no one's showing up to see any of the players, namesake-wise. Now, they're coming to see the players, and I don't mean it like to disparage what they're trying to do, but they don't have brand value at this point, you know, in the minor leagues. This is not like when Chris Bryant showed up to the Smokies a couple years ago for a rehab game. It was a Monday, and the minute that it was announced that he was going to be there, you know, you're talking about from maybe 800 to 1,000 seats to a sellout. I mean, that quick, because he's got value, you know, name value. He's earned sure. that. He's worked hard for that. Well, none of the players at the minor league level have that. So the teams have to do a really good job of marketing the entertainment aspect of, you know, showing up and coming to the games, right? Well, there's a conception that the teams in the minor leagues are making a big profit and, you know, and hoarding the money. I think some owners, probably major league owners, think that. I know some of the players think that, but that's not the case. I mean, there's really thin margins with minor league teams and making money, but it can be done. But the other part of it is owners of the minor league teams aren't making money off of the players. So some of them have decided that they're going to let the facilities that these guys practice in and the locker rooms and such deteriorate without upgrading. Now, the Smokies, they have a great relationship with Tom Ricketts. And I told Tom this, you know, talking to him during the off season. I guess it all feels like off season now, but I spent an hour in his office.
We're calling this the post off season on this show.
Yeah. It's incredible. I spent an hour in Tom Ricketts' office, and I said, if the other owners, we were talking about this, I said, if the other owners would have been, you know, active like you, you know, proactive and shown up and gotten to know the minor league operators. And Tom, for years, would come to Smokies games.
It's my understanding, too, that Tom and Theo, that was a big thing, that they were going to check out the facilities, and anyone that wasn't up to snuff, they were going to find somewhere that it was.
Yeah, and I mean, that really started before Theo. And I, honestly, and I've got a lot of respect for Theo, I can't remember seeing Theo at Smoky Stadium. But I'll tell you what, I saw Tom Ricketts, and I saw him there a lot because he was coming, you know, once or twice a year. And part of him being there was, you know, saying, hey, you know, I want to see what we got, and then I want our minor leaguers to have the best facilities that we can possibly have. Now, Theo's got people, obviously, that are involved, but Tom Ricketts being involved is a big part of this. And the Smokies went out and spent $900,000 just to upgrade the player facilities. Now, that does not happen a lot in the minor leagues. It's very rare. But I feel like Tom Ricketts' relationship with Randy Boyd, the owner of the Smokies, was one of the big reasons why, you know, and that included a brand new locker room and, you know, a just giant hitting center. And then that upgraded everything else they had, you know. So I think if other minor league teams and minor league baseball's office, if they would have pushed harder for some of these owners that are deadbeats, to be honest with you, to work harder to make sure that their partner, Major League Baseball, was happier, I don't know that we would be in this spot right now.
Hey, in a slightly related question, so you're talking about the Smokies, but you said that the people that you work for that own the Smokies also own three other teams. What are the other team affiliations? Because these are not all and this is more for, you know, the listeners who are listening, not all Cubs teams.
No. So they don't own the team, but they own the right to operate the business of the teams. It's an operation agreement, right? So you're talking Cardinals, Reds, and Twins. And me personally, I don't really have anything, and I've just worked, I do Cubs, Smokies, and, you know, and the Cubs. But I just know from being there and working with those people, you know, including the president of the Smokies, what goes into those teams. But, yeah, so basically what's different is that Major League Baseball owns those teams, those rookie league teams in the Appalachian League. And every league's different, but the Boyds own the Smokies, you know, like the contract. And so Major League Baseball will subcontract someone to come in and run the facility in the Appy League. But that's also why that they, you know, when they were targeting these teams to get rid of, they don't have to fight with anybody that if they're going to contract those teams, they just decide, you know, that they're going to do that. With the Southern League, you know, the one that the Smokies are in, they're going to get rid of Chattanooga and Jackson, and they're going to be dealing with lawsuits and fights, you know, because there's someone paid $14 million to own the right to have a major league affiliate team in their stadium. And now all of a sudden it's getting yanked out. Now the contract is up. So, you know, we'll see what happens, but you know, that it's a little bit complicated, but at the end of the day, Major League Baseball wants to have a smaller draft. They want to have less minor league teams. They want to pay the minor league players that they have more money. And they want to try to make the ballparks, you know, a better situation, you know, just structurally speaking. I don't know that I buy that, because there's some teams that the major league teams own that are, you know, that are crap. But because the big league team owns it, then they're going to ignore that, you know, whereas Chattanooga is a great market and, you know, they're not going to have a team. But look, at the end of the day, 42 teams are going to be gone. There's going to be a smaller draft, and there's going to be less people that are going to be thinking about baseball next year when we start playing again.
That's a shame. Mick, in 2017, you won the Minor League Broadcaster of the Year. Who are the influences that you had growing up as far as a broadcaster? And if you could maybe kind of talk about some of the Cubs broadcasters you have relationships with.
Yeah. Well, that's a good question. You know, I grew up in Baltimore, and Chuck Thompson was the voice of the Orioles. He's a Hall of Famer. And I listened to Chuck a lot, and then John Miller took over for Chuck. And so John Miller, you know, great, great broadcaster. Chuck Thompson later in my life ended up being a mentor to me before he passed away. And then I left Baltimore and I moved to New Jersey, and they didn't have Oriole baseball. It was before iPhones and all that stuff. And I started watching, this was in the 80s, I started watching the Cubs. That's when I became a Cubs fan, a huge Cubs fan, because of Harry Carey and Steve Stone, you know. So I was watching, you know, Mark Grace. I see Mark Grace at Marquee, you know, because I do stuff with Marquee. And it's like every time I see him, I'm like, man, I can't even remember how many times I wanted to be Mark Grace. You know, I'm a right-handed batter, but I would try to bat left-handed, you know, play first base, like, Sean Dunstan and Rhino, you know, obviously I've become really good friends with Rhino and Andre Dawson. I remember those teams. So Harry and Steve, and, you know, funny, you talk about like kind of transitioning into broadcasters. We play in the White Sox, one of my first spring trainings, and Stoney's there, you know? And I'm like, you know, Stoney walks in, Len and I are like setting up to get ready for the game. And, you know, he just comes in and, you know, we're all just, you know, bull crapping. And I'm like, in my back of my mind, I'm like, I've heard this voice so many times, you know? And there he is. So Bob Brenly went to Arizona and Jim DeShays ends up, you know, joining the Cubs. And he's in the booth with Len and I for a spring training game against the White Sox, just hanging out. And the game, the White Sox have the game on WGN television, right? So I'm on the play-by-play, you know, and I didn't know this at the time, but, you know, Len and I are doing the game, but I'm on the mic. JD and Len are kind of just talking in the back or whatever. And then all of a sudden, like, I guess Stoney's like talking about like, oh, there's, you know, Mick Gillespie, you know? And so I go back and someone sends me the clip, you know? And I'm like, man, that's crazy. You know, like just crazy. Like Steve Stone just said my name on WGN, you know?
You can hear him as a kid telling you, all you youngsters out there, for all you youngsters out there.
Man. Yeah. And well, you know, he was an Oriole too. He was a great Oriole pitcher, you know, Cy Younger, you know, just amazing. That he was on the Padres. I remember reading this in Earl Weaver's book, and I think about this all the time, you know, like, and he wasn't having the success that Earl Weaver thought that he should have. And the reason why is that the Padres didn't have a very good infield. And the Orioles, you know, back in the 70s, they had a great infield. Mark Belangerd was their shortstop. Doug DeSensei was at third, you know, they had a great second. They go and get him. And all of a sudden, you know, like he's like, he wins every game, you know? And baseball is funny in that realm, you know? So I met Stoney, you know, and I've gotten to know him and I think he's awesome, you know, but great relationship with Len, you know, I can't say enough awesome things about Len. I mean, I consider him, you know, a great friend. We'll do the games and go out and have a drink and talk about stuff. And, you know, anytime I ever need anything, he's there. He's the same guy like that. You watch him on TV and you're like, man, this guy's cool. You know, he's cool, man. Like he's cool off the air and he's genuinely a giving, caring person. You know, like he's someone that we all try to strive to be, you know. I'm definitely not the person that Len is, and I wish I was, you know, but every time I'm around him, I'm always like, man, this guy is he's just really awesome. Jim DeShays, love JD. When Bob Brenly was there, man, you remember those Dos Equis commercials, the most interesting man?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's BB to me, man. Like I did a show in Knoxville that was like a Saturday baseball show. It was a pure bite off of Bruce Levine's show on The Score. You know, like I was like, you know, I told Bruce, I'm like, I want to do this, you know, because it's so fun listening to you do it.
Inside the clubhouse.
Yeah. Yeah. You know,
on The Score. Yeah. 670 The Score inside the clubhouse. Yeah.
Every Saturday I would listen to it, you know? So I did my own, but I didn't go up against him, you know, cause I figured, well, look, if once you're done with that one, just flip over the internet and listen here. And so I had Bob Brenly on and it's like, you know, anything that you are interested in, there's a tie there, you know, like he's got a tie to it. Like you talk about Harry Carey and I'm like, you know, I want to be like Harry Carey in so many ways as a broadcaster. I want to be that guy that you three join in the bar and we just sit and watch the game. You know, like I feel like when I was a kid, like I'm just sitting in a bar with Harry and Steve and they're talking and it's funny and it's light. He knows the game. But it's an easy listen, you know, like you try to do that. So I talked to tell him, ask BB, like, what was it like, you know, Hank working with Harry, because he worked with him, you know, when he first started broadcasting. And he's like, he's got a story, you know, he's like, hey, if Harry, you know, is like, picks you to, you know, go out after the game, you go, you know, like, he's like, if, you know, and he's got stories on that. And I'm like, you know, I'm a big Grateful Dead fan. And he's like, you know, I'm playing for the Giants and da, 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 da. Next thing I know, he's like backstage with Jerry Garcia and the band, you know, right before their concert, you know, and he's got, you know, been through that, you know, so he's one of the, I mean, he was an all-star player. He was a World Series winning manager. He had a son that played on one of the Smokies teams that was a great kid. And, I thought a really good ball player. He's one of the most interesting people that I've ever been around as far as like Cubs broadcasters and people in general.
You know, Cubs fans used to call him Salty Bob at a point because he was there through 07 and 08 and, you know, things were going well for the Cubs then. And then as things kind of, you know, sort of, got depressed in Cubs land and the team went south, you know, Bob doesn't pull any punches about what he sees. If he sees a lack of hustle, it really pisses him off. So when Bob went to the Diamondbacks, I was really disappointed because I feel like Bob was one of those dudes that was just kind of telling it like we were feeling it as it went. He wasn't pulling punches, which I think is, I don't know the backstory of it, but it felt like that as a fan that they're like, okay, Bob, enough criticizing Alfonso Soriano. Like, you got to get out of here. Go make fun of the Diamondbacks. But I got to tell you, Mick, I really missed you and Len doing the radio games this spring. It got shut down early. And I got to ask, why did they not have it? I know they're launching Marquee and everything. It made me feel like it had something to do with that, and you're on that sometimes. But why didn't they do radio this year?
Well, I think that's a big part of it. You know, like they're covering all those games on Marquee. So when a crazy, crazy thing, like we started that webcast, we had it for 7 years, and it really got built into something because of you guys, you know, because, you know, you're listening to the games, you're doing your, you know, you're doing your different blogs and your podcasts and stuff. And you're like, hey man, we really like this, you know, like you guys made it happen. You know, you texting and tweeting and being a part of it, because it was, Len's kind of had this vision like, hey, this is different than radio and it's different than TV because we can be really interactive with Cubs fans. And I got to tell you, like, that's what made it so special. So last year, last game, you know, we're going into the, like the eighth or the ninth inning and Len looks at me and I'm like, you know, like, cause he normally does, like the way that we set it up is that Len does the first two innings. I do 3-4. He does 5-6. I do 7. He does 8-9 and we get out, you know? And if I'm there and Len's not, you know, I'll do them all. Or if I have someone in and, you know, and it's not Len, like it's like, I'll do the bulk of the inning, same, you know, structure most part. But he looks at me and he's like, I could see the little twinkle in his eye. And I'm like, okay, here we go. And he looks at me, he's like, hey, you know, Mick, voice of spring training, boom. And he back to me. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like this. Like, I knew when I was leaving that day, not because he did that or had the foresight to kind of just, like, give me that, like, walk-in, that shout-out, you know, in case we never do it again. But I just knew with Marquee coming and stuff, and there was just this feeling when I left the booth that day, like, the webcast is probably done, you know. Mm. But the good news is, and I missed it too, you know, and I really think that even with Marquee, there's a need for the webcast. And I hope that maybe they go back to it, but I don't know. But the Marquee comes, they're doing all the games. And, you know, those guys have been, I mean, super fantastic too, man. Like they put me on television, you know, like I'm supposed to do, let's tell you the story. The schedule that I got at the beginning of spring training was I'm going to Vegas. I'm going to do the two games that the Cubs are playing, the Reds, Len's off. And then I was going to fill in for him again at the end of the month. Well, you know, fast forward to, you know, 2 days before, I'm in the booth, you know, just kind of seeing what's going on the truck. I just want to be ready. And I over-prepared for it because I just didn't want anything to get messed up. And so I was there for a week, you know, like just being there. Which normally for TV you don't, but I just didn't want anything to go wrong because look, this is a dream opportunity, you know. I mean, like I've worked really hard for it, and so we're going to fly out on Friday. Thursday, I'm just supposed to sit in the booth between Len and JD. I'm going to put the headsets on, you know, and and just kind of listen to the producers and stuff. Stuff I don't really need to do, but I was just going to do it because I just wanted to be extra prepared, right? Well, I look at JD, and he's got this giant Yeti in his hand before they're doing their stand-ups to get the game started. And I'm like, hey, what do you got, some bourbon in there? And that he's a hilarious guy. And normally if you set him up like that, he's got something funny to say. And he looks at me, he's like, no, it's tea. I'm like, this guy's sick. I could tell he was sick. I didn't stay in that booth like I was supposed to. I went home. You know, I went back to the hotel I was at because I didn't want to get sick, because I knew that weekend was coming and it was going to be my debut on Cubs TV. And I mean, look, I grew up as a Harry Carey super fan, you know, so this was like, for a day, I'm going to be Harry Carey, you know, or 2 days anyway. And, but by the next day, JD's sick, he's out, he's not doing it. So, it ended up being Len. They didn't want to have two people, which was really smart, you know, do these games on television that hadn't done it, you know, so it was going to be JD and me. So it ended up being Len, me, and Cole Wright, who's on Marquee. And I got to tell you, it was so much fun, man. It was so much fun. We had a great time. They scheduled three more games, you know, two more games to fill in for the ones that, you know, that we were all three on instead of just me. So I was going to end up with five games on TV, which I thought was awesome. So yeah. Come back, everything goes great, and then, you know, I'm sorry to interrupt you. And then, you know, I'm doing radio against the White Sox that Friday, Cubs TV against the Indians on Saturday. I got a season ticket holder event that Sunday. And by Friday, because of the coronavirus and, you know, early May, or March anyway, I'm flying back home. And it was over.
Oh,
yeah.
I was going to tell you, Mick, you know, as a Cub fan, I tend to kind of lean towards the underdog. And for years, I was waiting for you to take the guest, the attendance crown from Len Casper. And now I feel like that's been taken from me. I never got to see your World Series moment of finally slaying those demons and defeating Len Casper in the, guess the attendance game. What makes him so good at that?
He's competitive. And for being the one of the nicest people you'll ever meet, like he's nice to a fault, you know, but you know how when we're on together, you know, like we just have this kind of like, we'll needle each other in a nice way, you know, and it's super, I love it. Like, I love it when Len gets under my skin just a touch, because I'll get off the air sometimes and laugh about stuff he says, because he is really funny. And that attendance game was always like, I was going to beat him and rub it in, you know, because, you know, I love doing that. And I just never got the chance. Like, he just beat me every day.
We were all rooting.
I don't know.
You were like the Ron Santo of that group of attendance games.
Yeah, trying to get into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, Ron Santo never won the attendance game against Pat Hughes. Like, it was ridiculous how bad he was at that.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, like, the best part about it is this. Look, Len put a pretty good whooping on me. I think I had like a streak of four or five straight games, and I could tell coming into that, like, I had gotten within like two games of Len, and I could tell that day, like, he was not going to lose. Like, he was like Jordan in the, you know, the ESPN thing. Like,
he was literally counting people from the booth, right?
like, I could tell, like, because what he would do is he would wait for me to go on the air, and then I would, like, notice, like, he'd be really quiet, right? Because I would say stuff, and then he wouldn't say anything back, and I'm like, what is he? And then I realized, like, he is, like, looking out the window, and he's, like, he's already, like, a super smart, observant guy. And
take another inning, Mick. Hold on. I'm still counting.
Oh, he beat me that one, and then after that, like, the wheels fell off. But the best part was the days where Len was on TV, and I would have someone else come in and be a guest with me, I never lost. So it was like, I thought maybe, like, I'm really bad at this. But I realized that, no, I mean, like, Len's just that good.
You're like, what would Len guess is what you had to ask yourself.
I would try to outthink it sometimes. Like, I'd be like, well, he went heavy yesterday. And then I'd go heavy and lose because of that. And then I would say, you know what, I'm going to go light today, you know, I lose because of that. Like, I don't know. When I had that streak, like I said, of like 4 or 5 in a row. To beat him, I literally had to get within like 30 or 40 on that number.
Wow.
Unreal.
Wow.
Mick, when you started.
That's like Price is Right, like the whole shebang. You win everything.
What?
Mick, when you started, Mick, the farm system the Cubs had wasn't much to speak of. But then obviously, clearly, things changed, and you got to see some pretty special talent coming through. You saw Bryant, Baez, Hendricks, Schwarber, just fantastic players. Did they, I mean, right away, were you able to notice that they were different than other prospects you've seen?
Yeah, well, a couple things. You know, Jim Hendry, when he was general manager, I thought he was one of the best people I was ever around in sports. I mean, I just think he's a really great guy. And I felt sorry for him because when the Tribune owned the team before Tom Ricketts bought it, like, it was run like a third-rate used car dealership, you know, like, like this. I mean, like, it was so ridiculous. Like, I went to see Jim would come to the stadium, and so everyone knew him. You know, he was really hands-on. And so, you know, once or twice a year he shows up, you know, he's going to take you out to, you know, to dinner and talk about that. He wants to know everything that's going on, you know, like he knows about your family and stuff. He's just a really good dude. And so I get to know him and he's like, hey, when you come to Wrigley, I'm going to give you some tickets. I want you to come in and, you know, come and hang out with me in my office, you know, and shoot the crap. So I'm like, all right, of course I'm going to do that, you know. So I go to Wrigley and I get there and I'm like, I see like his office, Crane Kenny's office. They're like, these are like broom closets. And they're like in Wrigley, you know, like in the stadium itself, you know, like, and like, there's like no window in there. And it's like, there's so much stuff and not enough place to put it all, you know? I'll talk to Crane about it sometimes, like just how crazy it was. Like they would literally like have to like load up their weights and take the weights to spring training and then bring them back. Like who does that? You know, like a major league team, you know? And one of the things that I kept hearing about at the time was that when the Cubs would go into the draft, now, you know, they won the division and were a playoff team in 07 and 08, you know, so they weren't drafting in the, you know, in the first round a lot, you know, like they were kind of back there a little bit, but when they would have like a pick, like the Tribune would be like, hey, you know, if that guy has this agent or if he costs this much money, you guys need to take somebody else. And so the scouts are like, man, we want to take like Matt Wieters was one of the guys I think they wanted to take. Like they knew like, hey, this guy's going to be a perennial big leaguer. Instead, they had to take like Josh Vitters, you know, and that's there's that over the course of time, it kills you. It absolutely kills you because you've got to be able to develop your own players. There's only so many free agents and trades that you're going to have. But, you know, Theo came in. And let me say this too, going back to that, we had good teams before Theo and those guys took over. DJ LeMahieu was on our team, and I mean, I thought, man, this guy's great, and he is great, you know. We had you know, Starlin Castro and Brian Flaherty, you know, not the superstars. Besides LeMahieu, and I don't even think he's a superstar. I think he's a really good player. We didn't have the superstars that the Cubs had, you know, after Tom Ricketts bought the team, until Tom bought the team. Because it was really tough for them in the draft to go and pay the money. You know, like, can you imagine having the second pick and the owner's like, hey, look, I know this Chris Bryant guy's pretty good, but we're going to take somebody that's a little cheaper, you know, that doesn't have Scott Boras as an agent. You know, like once Tom Ricketts bought the team, the checkbook was open and you could do whatever it took to win. That's what he wanted to do, you know. So getting into the talent, you know, like, and the only reason I'm saying that is because, the depth of talent that the Cubs had in their farm system was decent before, you know, Theo took over. It was decent, like the depth, you know, like there were a lot of like players that would contribute, you know, like there were some pitchers that would get to the big leagues, you know, or like some role players, you know. But what really blew me away and the biggest compliment that I could give to Theo, which is why I think he's one of the greatest, maybe the greatest executive of all time, is that when he sees the mega talent, he goes after it like Jaws going after a swimmer in those movies. I mean, like, it's relentless, man. Like, so when, you know, they bring in Javi Baez, Tim Wilkin was one of the Cubs scouts, and Tim and I are good friends. And he told me at the time, he's like, "Hey, you know what? I think we're going to take this one kid, and if we get him, you're going to love him." And I'm like, "Okay." And he's telling me about him. I don't think he told me his name, but he's just telling me about, like, we just so happened to be in Jacksonville. And he was there scouting Javi Baez, right? And he's just like, loves the guy, you know, Cubs take him. You know, I see Javi Baez, you know, when he comes to the Smokies. And I mean, like, I'm like, this guy to me is like Reggie Jackson. Like, not because you can't not watch what he's doing. His strikeouts are exciting. The home runs are exciting. When the game's on the line, Javi Baez is as good of a player as there is. I don't care if it's in the – he's better than Reggie in the field, to be honest with
you. So that's something you could see. Like, he just had that sparkle on him even when he came through Tennessee. Like, you're like, this guy's going to be – he's going to be on the cover of MLB The Show someday. Yes. Like, you knew.
I knew, and I think there were some skeptics with even within the Cubs organization. Because here's why. If you don't watch Javi every day – it's tough for you to pick up the base running, the routes that he takes on just like a pop-up down the line somehow. He's playing shortstop, and he just gets down the line and makes this basket catch to take a hit away from somebody or steal an out, you know. We had a no-hitter. We had this soft-tossing lefty throwing a no-hitter one time, and he threw it because Javi made two of those, like, incredible catches in the ninth inning. Like, it was like unbelievable, right? Like, I'm like, and the one was like a line drive up the middle. Like, I don't even know where he came from because he shouldn't have been playing there with the guy at the plate, you know, a right-hander. He should have been in the hole more. I mean, by the time he caught the ball, it was a line drive, a soft line drive in the center field. He's like behind the base, like 15 steps out. Like, it's almost like he has this pre-vision of where the ball is going to be. And you guys know now because you've seen him, you know, like someone hit him on purpose in a game, and he hit a home run off of that guy and then like stared at him the whole time around the bases, like the next time up. Like, that's what we want to do. Like, when you're on the playground and you don't like somebody, like, you want to show them up, like, but it just doesn't happen that often, you know? But then the bad games, you know, with the strikeouts and, you know, made some mistakes, maybe being a little over aggressive. And I think people weren't really sure what to take of that, at first, you know, but I don't know. To me, I played a lot of baseball, and he was always someone that was like at the top of my list. Chris Bryant, you know, is so on the exact contrast of that. It's like, and I mean, like, he's so consistent, you know, like, being from Baltimore, like, I'm looking at Chris Bryant and I'm like, this guy's Cal Ripken. I saw Mike Bryant when I was in Vegas, and he was like, you were the first one to say that. And he goes, you said that. And he goes, man, I've always thought of that since then. And I still do. It's because he's a big guy who could play shortstop, but plays third, could play outfield. And it almost, to me, sometimes looks like he's out of position because he's so big. But he handles the job well. You know exactly what you're going to get from KB day in and day out. He is a tender-hearted guy towards the fans. And Javi is, too. I got to say that about Javi, too. Like, for being, like, these star players, like, the amount of autographs that I saw those guys sign, and Chris was so easy to deal with. And by honestly, Javi too. Javi was just so quiet, you know, like, and you wouldn't think that, but he was a really quiet guy. And I think he still is. Like, on the field, he shows all this personality, you know, but I see him now, like, it's the same dude, like, just laid back guy. KB, just day in and day out, was the most consistent player that I ever saw. Kyle Schwarber before the knee injury, and I think he's starting to finally get, like, the Schwarbs thing back. But I'm on the radio when Schwarber was on our team, and they were going to – the only reason that he wasn't in the big leagues sooner was because they wanted him to be a catcher, you know, and right. He was going to do the catching thing. But the problem was that the Cubs and Joe Madden, really, I put this on Joe because he wanted him in the big league. They weren't patient enough to let him develop – to be a catcher, and he had some work to do, but I don't necessarily think that he wouldn't have done it. I think that there's a chance that he could have been a catcher. And if you ask him, I'm sure he'd say, yeah, I could have done it. I mean, it was just going to take some time. You know, he's got really hard hands, you know, like he doesn't have a soft, like when you watch Wilson Contreras catch, and it was Contreras and Schwarber were our catchers that year, by the way. I think about that for a minor league team, and Contreras won the batting.
Yeah, we were actually hoping for that at the major league level at one point.
Yeah, so right, that duo, right? And but when you watch Contreras catch the ball, it's just like there's just something about it. It's like he's catching an egg or something. Like he's just got real soft hands, and Schwarbs was developing that, but he has a great arm, and he's a smart guy, you know, I'm on the air and I'm like watching him hit every day. And I'm like, this guy would be like one of the top 10 left-handed hitters in the big leagues right now. And he goes to the big leagues and he was, you know, so it was hard to keep him out, to keep his bat out. But the Cubs, I think they gave up some development there because, you know, you want to win. But that's what you're in this for, you know. So, but he was a great talent. Sam Zielinski, the scout that, you know, was involved in signing Schwarbs, was adamant about this guy and what he brings to the table, not just the bat, but also the leadership, the person, you know. And I got to give, you know, Theo and the scouting department for the Cubs a ton of credit, because they pay a lot of attention to that too. And they haven't missed with these first round picks. You know, going back to, you know, before before Theo got there, like the Hayden Simpson pick, I mean, like you just can't miss with the first rounders. You know, if you get the first round pick right and the rest of the draft wrong, if you get the first round pick really, really right, you can get away with that, mm-hmm. you know, like, but you got to, you can't mess up the first round pick. And it's like every one of them so far I've been impressed with, you know, with you know, Chris Bryant and Kyle Schwarber, even Ian Happ and Albert Elmore. I mean, they're in the big leagues, and I don't think their careers are over yet. You know, they've struggled, but it's Major League Baseball. You know, you're going to struggle. You go through that. But those guys showed up, and it was the same thing. The players who are going to star at the Major League level, and this is what I learned going back to Theo and his ability to go after the, you know, the mega talent, the Jorge Soler's, is that they make the game look easy. And I had never really seen that until, you know, Javi and then the line, you know, mm-hmm. of these guys, the core guys. That's why the Cubs won the World Series. They don't win it without his ability to go after these, you know, these amateurs and predict that they're going to be great players.
Speaking of that, where were you on November 2nd, 2016?
Man, you know, I was at the Smokies at a staff work retreat. And so I'd gone up for game 3, 4, and 5. So I was up there for all those games. And my buddy Wayne Randazzo was going to go to the game 7. And so I'd gone to game 3 with him. and then hung out with him and out when the Cubs won game five, you know, out on the street, man, which was still, I think still maybe one of the top five highlights of my life, you know, like when the Cubs had finally won a World Series game at Wrigley. So. And so we're all out there and Wayne's like, hey, I'm going to the, you know, the game in Cleveland. I'm like, hey, you know what? I should go too. But the, when you do these like work retreats for this, well, for me anyway, for the Smokies, since I'm not, I don't work full time for them, you know, like I'm just kind of like an independent contractor. They extend an invite for me to go. And so like they have bedding and food and they give you like work shirt, you know, not work shirts, but like, you know, like gear and swag. And it's really, really fun. Like they were like, would have frowned heavily on the fact if I that if you know if I would have broke out to go to game seven, you know. So,
hold on though, really?
Yeah,
it's
well,
it's the World Series, it's the Cubs.
I know.
Like my children didn't go to school.
I know. Hey, listen, I still can't believe. Look, when they gave me a World Series ring, man, I just was like, I can't even believe this. Like,
oh, that's awesome.
You know, like this is just. I you know, like, and people are like, hey, don't wear this thing. Like, I'm like, you talk about, there were a lot of us that were very undeserving. we are very appreciative, though, you know.
I don't know. And, I think every single Cubs fan should have gotten one for how what we went through as a fan base. We all deserved rigs. I know we could have bought them ourselves, but not on a podcaster salary.
Right. Yeah. Well, 2003 was the worst sports experience that I've ever had. I mean, that just, you know, like the whole thing, you know, like all those years of, you know, like became a Cubs fan and I like watched them like get rid of Greg Maddux, like, which was awful. I knew it at the time and I'm like, what is going on here? You know, like I would watch the Cubs like every day they were on, you know, like I'd hook school to watch the Cubs. I'd get off the bus and run to get there, you know, to be there.
You said you grew up in Baltimore, right?
Yeah, this is when but I lived in New Jersey at the time when I became like, because we didn't have the Orioles, and so, but they had WGN, and I'm like, I'm not a Yankee, I'm not a Met, you know. And
that, then, that's like, really early for those day games if you're on the East Coast.
Yeah, right.
No, it's late.
You're skipping like half of your school.
No, it's late. It's an hour later.
Yeah, so it was.
Oh, it's
like,
later. Oh,
yeah,
my
so
bad.
Like, yeah,
I'm ridiculous. I'm in Mountain Time, and I don't know my time zones.
No, I mean, like, I would, like, seriously, like, get off the bus and hustle. And there were a couple of Maddux starts where I, like, hit under the bed and you know, and just had to stay home and watch it. And then you go through all that, you know, like, I thought that, you know, and I thought that, what was it, Don Baylor was going to win, you know, like, I love Jim Riggleman. I met Jim Riggleman. He's a great guy, by the way. But, I mean, all these, like,
Sweet Lou in 07, 08, you thought that maybe they could get it done with that team, too, especially 08. Yeah.
But, I mean, but the that whole, the Bartman game and all that stuff, I mean, that was just, like, and I'm not saying that it's because of Bartman. I'm just saying that whole experience, like, I was ready for that to happen, and then, like, I didn't even want to watch baseball for a long time, like, you know, just devastated. And then, then, you know, flash forward, you know, 2016, I mean, you know, get to be a part of it, you know, and it's still something that, like, I'll never forget, you know, I mean, like, forever. Like,
you know, Mick, it's funny because Danny and I actually went to an event with Len Casper out in Club 400, which we'd hope you'd one day kind of come visit if you're in the area. But Club 400's a charitable organization, Cubs fans, helping Cubs fans.
Yeah, we're sending Mick beer, Club 400 beer. I already talked to Stuart about it.
Perfect
for mix so for mixed beer tastings
but what we ended up, you know, Len was talking about 2003, and you got to remember Len was on the Marlins side at that time. He's broadcasting for the Marlins, and you know, he asked, boy, you know, didn't it make it that much sweeter when it did happen in 2016? But I was at all the playoff games in 2003, including the Bartman game and game seven when Wood hits the home run off Redmond and the places. And I got to tell you, like you said, that was a dagger in my heart. Like I still think that that was one of the best teams I ever saw. And I think that they should have won the World Series. I just, to this day, I'm still just that one. You know, I say that the World Series has cured it, but that one was the one that really kind of shook me to my core as a Cub fan.
That's when I started really believing in the curse. you know, because I'm looking at that Marlins team and I'm like, you know, we're better than these guys. Like, we are just better than these guys right now, you know? And it's like everything, just the way that everything fell apart, man, I don't know. Like,
that's Cub.
I totally agree with you. That is the time that I started believing in the curse too, because the Barbin thing happened. I was in my living room in Iowa with some friends and we just lost our minds. Yeah. Like every one of us, just that one little tiny thing happened and we were like, we felt that far away. It was weird. Yeah. And then after that, did it not seem like every time the Cubs hit a ball, it hung in the air, and every time the Marlins hit a ball, it dropped for a single?
It was like, I remember like watching that and it being like just excruciating. Like I want to turn the TV off because I can just feel the momentum is just gone, you know, like, and these guys have it now and we don't. And it's just happening in slow motion, you know, like it's like a car wreck, you know, like you're just like, man, I can't get out of the way of this. Just one event after another, like, it's like in football, you get to that point and you can call a timeout. It was like the Cubs just didn't have a timeout to use. You know, like, what could they have done? I don't know.
Yeah.
But, man, you hate to, like, feel like you want to cry after a game. But that game six was the worst sporting experience in my life, I think.
Well, you go through these things. You go through these periods, and it increases your fandom in a way. Because you've suffered with the team, and so it's all that much sweeter, I guess, in 2016.
Yeah. It's the sunken cost. You're like, the sunken cost fallacy. They say you're supposed to fucking bail out after that, but you know, you're like, I've been doing this for 20 years. There's no way I'm stopping now.
Man, I got this. I brought my wife to Vegas with me for the games. I was in my first marquee games, and I got this jacket. It's the blue Cubs jacket back in the 80s. Like, it's the starter jacket. You know, like when they first came out, there's like one, there's a picture of Ronald Reagan throwing out a first pitch wearing that jacket, you know. And I still have it. I cut like 11 lawns to make that. It was $107. I did lawns for $10 a piece. I cut like, that was a lot of lawns for me.
It's 11 lawns. You know? Plus tax.
I don't even know and that's over the course of months. Like, it wasn't like a week. You know, so you're talking about as a middle school kid, but it fits her and it's still in great shape. Like, because I love that jacket so much. Like, I took so much pride. Like, I wore that. You know, I had my Cubs hat. You know, like my Grace jersey that I used to wear back in the day. But I was like, I just want, for my own like fandom, I want you to wear this to the game in Vegas, and I want to take a picture of that jacket, you know, because it means a lot to me. And and we did, you know, because if she wouldn't have wore the jacket, she wasn't going to get to come to Vegas, so she was going to wear the jacket. But she said that she was getting like a lot of compliments from people, and I was like, yeah, because it's, that jacket is still cool. It was cool from the day that I bought it until now, right? But I think it also goes back to like what it is. Like, what I didn't grow up in Chicago, you know, so I didn't grow up being a Cubs fan. It just happened because I was somewhere and that was the team that I would watch on television. And I just fell in love with everything about the Cubs, you know. So I start getting Cubs gear, you know, like I've got, like, from back in middle school, I got like Cubs lamps and Cubs this and that, you know, T-shirts and shirt, all the stuff, you know, like, because I just got so into the Cubs. And it's like having that jacket and going to school, it was crazy, like, how many other Cubs fans would just pop up, you know, like, you just, like, it was like I had just gotten into this really cool fraternity, you know, because, like, Cubs fans are just different, man. They're just different, like, because we love our team through thick and thin, you know. We're not front runners, you know. It's like you run into someone and you're like, hey, you know, that game was terrible. Like, I remember, like, I didn't even want to talk about baseball. And when that was happening, I was still playing baseball, you know? And like, I'm like, I don't even want to talk about it because it was so painful. But other Cubs fans would be like, this kind of like, even that, to even talk about it, but just to go like have a beer or whatever with someone back then.
Well, I think
just because like, that, you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, just that,
well, Mick, I think we hear that in your voice. You know, what you're striving to do is being like a fan, like Harry Carey was a fan, living and dying with the team. We're all feeling his emotions and, you know, feeling what it's like to be at that game. I get that from you when you're calling a game and that you care about this team. Because one of my questions is, like, could you do this for another team equally as well? Like, let's say you're with an A's affiliate or something.
You may have to at some point. I mean, that's kind of how the broadcasting business works, right? We don't usually get to talk to broadcasters who are fans of the team that they're broadcasting for.
Yeah, you know, I'm a fan of the organization, too. You know, I'm definitely a mark for the Cubs. I mean, look, you know, grew up a fan, and then, and you know, and I think Tom Ricketts is the best owner in baseball. Man, I just do. I just know him. I know his family. I just think they're great people that are dedicated and really will do anything for anyone.
Well, I mean, make sure you don't listen to the rest of our shows then.
Yeah, well, but I mean, you guys have a different experience than I do. You know,
sure,
like,
sure.
I have the experience of like, hey, I sent him an email and I'm going to be in Chicago, and the guy like stays around in his office for an extra hour to talk.
Well, it makes a huge difference when you have a personal relationship with a person.
Sure.
More so, you know, like it you're able to see, you know, these people as more like their human counterparts, where we get to see sort of the caricatures of who they are.
Well, and I mean, like, you know, some of that's the media, you know, it's tough being
Chicago.
It's tough being the Cubs. Like I look at the White Sox and it's like, it's so double standard, you know, like, like anything you do when you're a Cub is like magnified. And I guess that's part of it. Like being like this, you know, super brand, you know, but he's a great guy. And, you know, and honestly, like I like Crane Kenny. I like Theo. I don't know Theo well, but I think he's a, you know, I know the people that work for him, the Jason McLeods of the world. They're great guys, you know, the scouting department, you know, the players. I mean, I am a mark, but, you know, my agent, you know, my friends are like, hey, I've been really close to being there full time, you know, or like being a part of the, you know, of the everyday big league thing, and it hasn't happened. And there's a, you talk about politics, there's a, you know, political aspect of all this too.
Sure.
And then so far it really hasn't, you know, bounced my way, you know, but hopefully it will. Hopefully eventually, like, having talent will, you know, will get me to where I want to be. But people say to me all the time, like, hey, you know, you got to branch out from the Cubs, you know? And it's, and on one hand, it's like, yeah, I mean, definitely. Like, I wouldn't turn a job down from any other team. And look, if I went to the Reds or I went to, you know, I don't know, like the A's.
Cardinals.
See, you're doing that to me. But I mean, whatever. Like, you would go wherever you get an opportunity, and,
sure,
and you would love to be in the big leagues every day. So I'm not putting
Harry was down there for a while, so you'd be following a good path.
Right, but he saw the light by the end of this his time. No, it's major leagues. You're going to go there and do your best,
sure,
and fall in love with all of them. I mean, it's just a coincidence, honestly, that you know, that a team that I've kind of had a passion for is a team that I work for. But I also think that you guys know, you've listened. Like, I think I'm fair. You know, I don't think like people listen and think like, okay, I'm such a fan that I can't get on here and be like still a reporter and be professional and objective, sure, you know?
Yeah, but you're more Pat Hughes than Santo, for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, like, yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean Santo, I don't even know if he qualified as a broadcaster. He was just he was like my favorite uncle sitting there complaining about the team. I loved it.
I loved him. I didn't even think about Ronnie when we were talking about like, hey, who are some of the broadcasters? One of the best stories that I have of my baseball life, 2010, the Smokies have this amazing team. They end up, it was the year after Rhino was the manager, and he had just instilled this like win mentality with the teams that he managed. because he wanted to win so bad. I mean, like I say, like Rhino, and I tell Rhino this, like he wanted to, he would chew his arm off to get a win, and he would, no doubt about it. He wanted to win more than anyone I've ever been around, and I'm sure that's why he's a Hall of Famer. And the next year, he moved on to AAA Iowa, and we had Bill Dancy, who's another incredible baseball guy, slides in. Team ends up 33 games over 500, and we lose the championship series. Just some fluke stuff. We didn't win it. So 2 days later, I'm in Wrigley, and one of the first people I see is Ronnie, right? And, you know, like, I mean, just I don't even know how he even remembered me, you know, because I'm not there a lot, right? But Furt gives me a hug, like wants to know about the team, wants to know about the players. Next, and I tell him, he's like, "How are you doing?" And I'm like, "I'm not doing good, man. I'm just broken because I thought for sure this was the best team I've ever been around every day, personality wise, playing wise, like just they just should have won, right? But they didn't, and so." He puts his arm around me, takes me into the dugout. We were on the field before a game, and I'm in the dugout, and he's like, you know, because I went to school at Alabama, he's like, "Hey, you know, you've got to know Billy Williams, right?" And I'm like, "No." And he's like, "Well, Billy Williams is a huge Alabama fan." So then he, like, yells over, like, only like he can do, you know, "Hey, Billy!"
And Billy!
Him over.
Billy!
Yeah, right. Exactly. Everybody's looking. And the next thing I know, it's like the three of us are like in there just talking, you know, like, and ever since then, like Billy's been just a great friend. Every time I see him, like we talk about football and all kind of stuff. Just think that like Ron Santo, like started one of my favorite relationships that I have in sports, you know, and you talk about him being on the air. Like everything he did is exactly what we tell people not to do. know, like, that's exactly what you like don't want to do, but he did it and it worked. And I loved him. I loved listening to him on the radio. I told him this too. Like I would watch the games, but I couldn't listen to the games, even though I'm a more of a radio guy. I'd say like, as far as just me personally, I like listening to the games probably more than watching them because I can do other stuff, you know,
yeah, I'm with
and I
you.
Would watch. Yeah, and I would watch Harry and Steve, and Harry would just start telling Santo stories, like, on the TV, right? So my whole, like, image of him was from the WGN camera, like, being in, like, Harry's telling a story or Stoney is, and the next thing you know, like, they've, like, got a shot of, like, Santo, like, in the, you know, in the radio booth, you know, doing whatever, you know, like, "Well, it reminds me of this time, you know," and then they're talking about that. My grandmother, she's got diabetes, and I just remember her being like, you know, Ron Santo has diabetes, you know, and I didn't really know much about diabetes at the time, but I knew who he was from watching the Cubs, you know. I was like, "Ah, yeah." And so, you know, it was just cool. It's been great. Like I've interviewed his wife on, you know, the Cubs games, and
sure, she does a lot of charity work. I know still.
Man,
I don't know if she's still doing it.
So hard.
Yeah, is that charity still going? It's for, is it JDRF or
JDRF? Yeah, it's still going.
And the dogs.
Yes.
Yep.
The dogs.
Yeah.
They have these special dogs that are trained for people that have diabetes.
Oh, and, okay. Now I remember. Okay. Yeah. I remember from the commercials and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of where that came out of. But I'm so glad he got in the Hall of Fame. I wish he would have got in while he was still alive.
One of the biggest
guys out there.
Yeah.
It was brutal. It happened after he died because nobody wanted it or deserved it more just from a personal level than he did.
But I will tell you that a lot of people kind of said, "I'm not going to the Hall of Fame ceremony," but my dad and I did, and we did it out of respect for Ronnie and his family. You know, Vicky, Jeff, Ron Jr., those guys. I mean, they're terrific people, and you know, to go there in Cooperstown and see him get and see his plaque and realize that he did. You know, he wasn't here to enjoy it, and that's really the shame. But he's a Hall of Famer, and that can't be taken away. You know.
Yeah. Well, Billy was talking to me about it, like kind of going into the Veterans Committee, and he was on the committee, and you know, he said, well, I never really talked about Ronnie's on-field stuff because everybody saw that. He said, you know, but I talked a lot about how he was off, you know, off the field and all the great things that he did for people. And he deserved to be in a long time ago. I'm just glad he got in. I think it's really cool that you were there too. That's neat.
Yeah, it was a great experience. My dad and I, we were there for the jersey retirement. We were there when he got his statue, and that, and then the third thing was the Hall of Fame. So we called it our trilogy.
That's awesome.
So I know we're running kind of long here. We told you a half hour. It's already at an hour, but I do have some questions from our Facebook group, which is the Sun Ranto Ranters, and these are usually inappropriate, but they actually did it. They actually did a good job this time. What do you think about the salaries? I know you mentioned it earlier that they're planning on raising the salaries. Still not necessarily a livable wage that they're offered. But what do you think about what MILB is doing or Major League Baseball is doing to raise the salaries? This comes from Kevin Cook.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's part of the contraction too, you know, because they're going to have less players and they're going to pay the ones that they got there more money. You know, I don't know. I'm kind of torn on the whole thing. I mean, like, I feel like minor league baseball is, and I'm part of it too, you know, like even my job, I feel like it's kind of like an internship, you know. It's like you're doing it to try to get to the major league level, but I see how hard these guys work, and you know, I appreciate the struggle, man. Like I hope that they do get more money. I wish that it wasn't at the expense of other people getting a chance, though, you know, like smaller drafts and less players in the organization. But, you know, I'm glad that they're going to make more money because I do know what a struggle it is. And I know how hard, you know, that these guys go out there and play. But, I mean, like, it's crazy. We're, like, I don't know. It's like, there seems like there's this giant pot of money and not much of it gets to the minor leagues for some reason. You know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, and fans are complaining about it now too, but just for the sake of equity between it all, because, you know, obviously you go from what, $5,000 to $500,000 pretty much overnight. I know a lot of these guys get bonuses and stuff like that, but it does seem like, to even from a fan standpoint, and I'm just curious about your thoughts about this, but doesn't it seem that it would make sense to invest in your minor leagues in order to have a better major league system? I mean, they thought of that in terms of like the Dominican academies that they built. I don't know if you've seen that. The Cubs have a state-of-the-art facility to develop players from down there. But I'm just wondering, like, do you ever, you know, you're getting off the bus, you've been driving 8 hours, you're going from, you know, you're driving to Birmingham or whatever it is, and you know, it took forever and the flat tire and whatever, and you're like, you know what, these guys need to be treated a little bit better just so that it's a higher level of play for them to develop. Do you ever have that thought?
I mean, look, I'm going to tell you this. I'm a pretty old school guy, you know, like, and I've been doing this for a while. You know, when I first got in, my very first minor league manager was Russ Nixon, who was like third base coach for the Big Red Machine, managed the Braves and the Reds. And the
I think he got impeached, right? Oh, wait, wrong Nixon.
Wrong Nixon.
Yeah.
Wrong
Nixon. This is the baseball Nixon.
Yeah, you were in the 70s with Richard Nixon's brother. That's what it was.
So, well, Russ did get impeached from two manager jobs, one with the Reds and one with the Braves. He was the manager right before Bobby Cox took over in
for
Atlanta,
the next, you know, so 3 decades or something.
Yeah, but, I mean, this guy had been in baseball forever, and, like, you know, he just taught me, like, the right way to do everything, like, and was adamant about, like, you know, whether it was getting on the bus, dressing, the questions, the way you ask questions, understanding, like, what's appropriate, what's not appropriate. Even taught me great bourbon because he was from Cincinnati, right there by Kentucky. I've been a Blanton's drinker ever since, you know. So this is a long time ago, he's telling me, he's like, hey, you know, when I've been doing this job a long time, and it used to be like I was the manager, the pitching coach, the hitting coach. I threw all the BP every day. You know, I was the trainer if someone got hurt. And then, like, you know, and he's basically saying, you know, now we got a pitching coach, a hitting coach, and a trainer, right? So this is like, you know, the early 2000s. Well, you know, fast forward to now, and Theo comes in, and Tom Ricketts buys the team, and they're going to invest in these players. And maybe the salaries aren't great, but, I mean, you talk about, like, just having it made compared to the way that it was not too long ago. Mm. They've got their own personal chef that, like, does all their food for them. You know, we used to be crammed on one bus for these, like, long trips. Two buses for the longer trips, so everybody has, like, enough room, you know. Like, you know, they have their own equipment guy, you know, the trainer guy. They got a video guy that's just there, like, shooting their videos every day. That some teams have more than one hitting coach. The Cubs have, and it's not like that for all the teams in minor league baseball, but the Cubs do everything possible to make their, you know, their situation better. And what's weird is, like, the more they do, the more complaining I hear. I don't understand that. I mean, look, and I love the guys, you know, and it's not every guy, you know, but you give me David Bode. It's like the guy that's like, he wants a uniform and that's it. Just give me a uniform, a bat and a ball. I'm going to go out there and, like, we're going to have some fun playing this game. You know, you'll hear some of the guys, it's like, you know, why don't we get this? Why don't we get that? It's like, man, you know, you get a lot. Like, you got a brand new clubhouse. You got this and that, you know. Like, I just feel like it's like if they're more focused on getting to the big leagues, when you get there, it's like the streets are paved with gold, you know. So, I mean, I'm sympathetic, you know. I mean, I get it. Like, you got some of these guys have families and all that, but being in the minor leagues is supposed to be kind of like a short stint to get to the big leagues. And then all of a sudden now your value is the fact that your name brings value, you know, like Javi Baez shows up to a supermarket and he can, you know, for $100 a piece, sign autographs, you know, because people are going to show up to see him. I mean, he plays in a baseball game. Like, you want to go watch it. Like, Javi Baez could just go play in a minor league game where no one knows anyone else. Or the same thing with Chris Bryant. And they're going to sell, you know, people, the market's going to take care of itself because you're going to show up. You want to see these guys, you know, because they're a commodity. So I don't know. I think there's a balance there.
Do you think it has anything to do with, like, you know, the Instagram, Snapchat age, the TikToks of just kind of wanting to be maybe famous before you've done anything real? Like, there's some sort of, like, I don't know, they're kind of getting ahead of themselves, these young guys, because they know that the fame is right there for them?
Well, I think that part of it is, when I grew up, you know, I was poor, you know. I had to work really hard to get where I'm at, you know, like just basic stuff, you know, like when you have the heat on or have, you know, get a Christmas gift, you know, like, mm-hmm. like the life that I have now is way different, you know. And I feel like, when I first got into baseball, there were a lot more players who had that in common with me than now, you know. And I'm not saying that I've never looked at someone that had it, like, you know, that had a good childhood and, you know, that they were privileged as a bad thing. You know, I'm definitely envious of that. That's just not what I knew, you know. So I've had to work hard. And I guess part of that is the appreciation of, man, I get to work in baseball every day. Like, I've never lost that, like, where it's like, mm-hmm. you know what, I'm showing up to a baseball stadium today and someone is paying me. I'm doing something right. I'm ahead of the game, you know.
Yeah, I think that's a lot to do with, you know, the whole transition for, you know, kids. The kids that make it are the kids that were on travel teams and,
right,
that's, you know, point. Doing all this stuff. So
private lessons.
I think maybe you're hitting on something there a little bit, that the people who had more of your background aren't making it anymore because they couldn't afford to be on those teams.
The guys from Venezuela have more in common with my childhood than most of the players from America. Hmm. And I never hear those guys complaining about anything. You know, you talk to the guys from the Dominican that, you know, were like kind of like me, probably worse, you know, like worse off because it's really bad in some spots. They're not worried about that. They're focused on just being a baseball player, doing the things that they have to do. And I'm generalizing right now, but this is what I've noticed, you know, and sure. It's like when I see these articles that some of these former minor leaguers are writing and it's like just like a bitch fest, I just shake my head. I'm like, man, we're in baseball and you weren't good enough to make it. And I might not be good enough to make it. And if that at the end of the day is the way that it is, then that's just the way that it is, you know, because, you know, you hope that the cream rises to the top. But taking away all of these opportunities by shrinking the amount of players and teams that we have in the minor leagues, to me, just seems as bad of an idea as juicing the baseball and acting like you don't know it's juice. Just seems like a bad idea to me.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
So I guess that's where I sit on that. But I at the, you know, at the same time, and I mean, I get it. Like, there's a lot of there. It costs a lot of money to be doing this, and
the way that they kind of put set lists together and stuff like that, that are just different. And I think that it kind of, you know, at the end, like I said, obviously if you listen to the 70s Dead, like 77 or the early 80s or whatever, you pick a year, you know, it's the band had a lot of energy, but later on in the 90s, you kind of felt like, I don't know, sometimes they kind of felt like the, you know, I feel like it's kind of like a revived energy. Now I saw him at Wrigley. I've seen him at Alpine Valley. I'm 15 minutes from Alpine Valley right now.
Nice.
So it's been fun to kind of see him listening, like I said, put together some set lists that were just different than what I heard, you know.
Yeah. I'm back
to
by the way.
See him in person. Oh, you back?
Yeah. Sorry about that. My computer's given up the ghost ever since I updated my operating system. So it just ejects everything all at once and makes psychedelia happen. So I get, at least that's cool.
Well, Danny, it worked out because we changed it from a Cubs podcast to a Grateful Dead podcast.
I know. I heard that happen like right in the middle of the show. But maybe that's our cue anyway to just kind of wrap up here. I do have one more question though for you, Mick. And it also comes from the Sun Ranto Ranchers page, and they want to know, kind of, you know, who are your top three prospects coming out of AA last year? Who should be in maybe one sleeper? And let me preface it by saying we're all expecting pitching up here at the major league level because they promised us that they drafted well recently and there's pitching that's coming. Who do we get?
Yeah, I hope that the pitching's coming because there's some guys that I would figure could get up there and contribute. Tyson Miller would probably be at the top of the list.
Sure.
He just looks like a pitcher. You know, he throws a lot of strikes. Like he sets batters up. He struggled with the juice ball in AAA, but in the Southern League, you know, he was really, really good. Kind of Kyle Hendricks-esque, you know, like where he just throws strikes and pitch really fast games and get outs, you know, pitch to contact outs. And, you know, like I was talking to him at Cubs convention and he was telling me like, you know, just about the difference in the ball. And he's like, you know, like balls that should be flyouts or home runs, you know, and so it's a whole different game, you know, when you're up there dealing with that. But I think Tyson Miller, Corey Abbott is another pitcher who I was surprised that I didn't see him at spring training. And I don't know why because I didn't ever see him to talk to him, but he's a change up away from, I think, being kind of a Randy Wells type of pitcher. And I got to be honest, I always liked Randy Wells. I thought his changeup was the best changeup, one of the best changeups I ever saw. And so I kind of likened him to Randy Wells, like, except it's not – he doesn't have a great changeup. I mean, it's not because of the changeup, but he just reminded me of him, you know, like where I could see him being like someone – who could come in and contribute, you know, like a decent fourth or fifth starter and surprise you. And maybe even more, you know, but he's got some work to do, but I think he's, you know, a very good pitcher. And, you know, those two guys are probably at the top of my list. You know, just kind of off the cuff here. I'm trying to think of who else might be.
About I'm talking to Zach Efros tomorrow on the show I met you on this last week, The Rant.
Yeah.
So he's another one that I think that people were looking at especially we want him because his name is Efros and our manager's name is Ross, and we're just going to have a lot of fun with that.
Yeah, he's a really nice guy. You know, there's a bunch of pitchers who have to make that next jump, but if they do, it's not like there's a bunch of, you know, big league bullpen guys right now holding them back.
Right.
You know, it's not like you're playing third base and you got Chris Bryan ahead of you. You know, it's like you go up there and throw strikes and hit those locations and, you know, and all that stuff. And there's definitely an opportunity there for you. I want to see what Adbert Alzolay does. He wasn't with us last year, but if the injury thing's really killing him. But I mean, every time I look at what his potential is, it's just frustrating because, you know, like, now this guy could be, you know, a solid three, maybe even a two. And he's got the kind of stuff that could make him, you know, one of the aces on the staff, but he can't stay healthy.
Could you see him moving to the bullpen possibly?
Yeah, I could, because they've got to figure out a way to get some use out of him, you know? And so, yeah, I could see that. I could see that. And then everyone saw Nico. You know, really last year was all about Nico. When Nico was there,
that was cool, like, huh? Just
watching him every day, you know, like, he's just so consistent. He's consistent, not in the Chris Bryant type of way where it's like he's a, you know, MVP type guy, but he just gives you, you know, the same thing every day. He could definitely be an all-star.
You know what, Mick, when I see him, it's like the moment never seems too big for him.
No. And I kind of had that feeling when he got called up. I went on the score and was like, you know, hey, look, this guy's going to be the same player in any game. He's, you know, I said he's like Ryan Sandberg, where it's like he reminds me of Rhino because of his shoulders, his build, you know, they're kind of both like smooth robots, like, you know, just to me. And then, you know, like, but you put him in the lineup every day. Like, Nico's a, hey, look, if Nico's playing second and batting, you know, batting second or something, you know, like he's just in the lineup every day. I'm not saying he's a Hall of Famer or anything. I'm just saying, like, he's, you know, he's just like, you know, with Rhino, you remember, I mean, Rhino's in there every day. Like, you just knew Rhino was going to be at second, you know, and he was going to be batting, you know, second or third, you know, like, that's just that's how life is. You know, Nico's one of those
players. I really think we need a t-shirt that just says smooth robot.
Yeah. And has those two guys on there. Yeah.
You know, Mick, I know, Mick, that you work for Marquee and you're a big Sandberg fan. Did you have a chance to see the new Sandberg game documentary that debuted last night?
No. We did one. Funny thing is, we did our own like years ago with the Smokies. So we had Bobby Dernier and we had Jody Davis that were working with the Cubs at the time, and they were both in that game. And then we had Rhino as manager. And so between that and the highlights, like, I've seen that game a million times. You know, I've talked to Rhino about him a lot, you know, like just it's crazy how technology's changed so much, because back then you only had like three games, you know. Right. I mean, like, I'm sorry, no. You had three channels.
Right,
three all the way back. You had three channels, you know. So if the game on Saturday was like, that was like the game that everybody was watching, you know. And then Rhino picks that game to just go nuts, like, and you know, Dernier talks, like, listening to Dernier talk about it. Jody Davis and I have become really good friends, and all those guys have so much respect for Rhino.
The Cubs are doing something new for season ticket holders. They have an exclusive Facebook group, and so they debuted it on Facebook that way yesterday. So it was a really good documentary. It was really well done. Cubs Productions have just been going nuts on that. So it's going to be out Monday at 7. If you got an opportunity, I think you'd enjoy it.
Oh yeah, I'll definitely check it out. I know that, like, with the whole coronavirus and stuff, like, they're not even close to being where they would want to be, you know, because sure, you don't have the games and all that. But those guys, when everything I've seen them put out has been quality. I mean, the Ernie Banks one was great. It's like, you're just captivated by it. But then again, like, we love the Cubs so much, like, you just would watch it anyway, you know?
Crawley has it on in his house 24/7. The TV does not shut off.
That's it. It's just Marquee all day, all the time.
Yeah, I love it. I can't wait until like life gets back to normal and we have games on. No, like just all. Like the little taste of spring training on marquee, like I would get to the stadium early to you know watch the games or whatever, and a couple times I'm like the first one in the press box, I turn the sound up, I'm watching, like, and it was like the same stuff like over and over again, you know, because they really didn't have a lot going on back then, and then you know rain outs and all that, and I mean, so, some of the things I saw like two or three times and I still thought it was great, you know.
Yeah, you know, and it's like you said, we're Cub fans, so it's just pure Cubs content, and so when it does get with more games and things going on, I really can't wait to see, you know, how it's going to turn out. I think they've done a great job so far. It's been a lot of fun to watch.
And I hope you'll be a huge part of it too, because, you know, you've got the familiarity with the Cubs fans. You know, we're already fans of you, and hopefully they'll keep having you on. And, you know, they've already hired about like 50 people to do the games. It seems they, you know, I mean, they have, they poached Doug Glanville and, from NBC Sports, that they have a whole new crew. They got Sambry, a lot of ex-players. So hopefully you'll be a part of it too in the future.
Yeah, I hope so. You know, who knows what's going to happen. But, you know, maybe when Len's off, I can fill in. I know this one thing I want to do. Like if that day happens, and hopefully it will, I want to go to the bleachers and like buy a round of drinks for everybody.
No, I'll be there and I will drink your drink.
Yeah, yeah, that's a lot of drinks, man.
Yeah, no, but maybe like a first. I don't know, like what? I don't know what my money's going to be like.
$10 a head.
Enough just for the Danny Rocket coach. Crew in the left field bleachers.
I can just tell you, Mick, that if you do make it out to a game, we'll be there and we will definitely show you a real good time in the neighborhood.
Oh, yeah. Well,
the only thing I got to do is I got to call dibs on Danny's couch. That's it.
Oh, yeah. Well, look, I'm down for that. But I'm saying, like, you know, if I'm there to work and do a game, then we got to have, like, some kind of quick, like, you know, we got to have, like, a toast.
Oh, hell yeah. No Absolutely. Doubt. Well, you know, I guess we should probably end it there. We've been going out an hour. I really appreciate all your time, Mick. And I've been wanting to do this for forever. If you look back in our tweet DMs, I think we've been planning to do this for a year.
Anytime, man. Anytime. It's been fun and, you know, like just love talking baseball, especially right now. And it's just so depressing sitting here with no games, you know?
Yeah. Well,
you seem to have a lot of enthusiasm for it. And it's actually, you know, in these times when we don't get to talk about it, like talking to you today and hearing your stories has been really nice. So I appreciate it. Thank you for coming on.
And you know, Mick, yes. I mentioned this before, you know, before we went on air, is that I never had been to spring training before. And I actually, my first spring training game was in Florida, Boston Red Sox versus the Cubs. They played because they're going to open up in Miami. And I was talking to Mick and I said, hey, can I just get a quick picture? And like Mick went out of his way to really kind of make it happen. So it was really awesome that he was able to do that. So not only that, I find out you're a deadhead. So now you're even like higher up on my pedestal, buddy.
Yeah. Well, you should have told me that day. Cause I mean, I don't know if I would have ever gotten back to the booth. I could sit around and talk about the dead just as much as the Cubs. So it was good to meet you. And I'm telling you, man, like this has been a lot of fun. And like I said, if you guys ever want me back on, just let me know.
Oh, yeah. We'll definitely do it sometime. I'm sure we'll have lots of questions as the season hopefully starts for the minor leagues. Like we didn't really talk about that because we don't know anything about what's going to happen. But we certainly hope something's going to happen with the minors. And we hope it, you know. We hope that, I don't know, there's baseball this year besides in Taiwan, because those games are fun, but I don't really understand Chinese. So it gets a little difficult. So, well, thanks for coming on, Mick. I really appreciate it. And we'll definitely talk again soon. And I guess until then, we on this show, we don't say go Cubs. We say it backwards. We say Spagog.
Spagog.
All right, Spagog. All right, guys. Spagog.
Cubs. The season is new. Gonna score
lots of runs off you, the Cubs. Wrigley's gonna roar, screaming fans, bleeding Cubby blue. Baseball out in the sun. Cubs will win the World Series, so don't make October plans. The Cubs putting runs on the board. Come and see the team. Ricketts can't afford. Chicago, the Cubs.
The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
I normally find bras to be so uncomfortable and constricting, but Skims has changed that. You know I love Skims underwear, so I finally tried their bras, and Skims has delivered again. Skims bras are worth the hype for the amazing shape and support they give, but what I wasn't expecting was how comfortable they are too. I've tried so many bras in the past, and the main issue that I have is that they weren't supportive enough, to the point where they felt slouchy. I love my Skims wireless form bra because it's so comfortable and supportive. The older I get, the more I care about actually being comfortable in what I wear every day. And with my wireless form bra, I no longer have to sacrifice my comfort for the support I need. Shop Skims bras at skims.com, now available in 62 sizes, 30A to 46H. Plus, get free shipping on all orders over $75. If you haven't yet, be sure to let them know we sent you. After you place your order, select podcast in the survey and select our show in the drop-down menu that follows.